Hello, and welcome to Industry Herb, your podcast about the inside trends and goings-on in the entertainment industry. I'm Ned Kuchmenda.
And I'm Lainey Kuchmenda. Today, we're going to be talking about our top albums of 2019 so far.
That's right. It's been a pretty crazy year for music, and there's been a lot of phenomenal releases, and we're going to try to cover all of them or most of them in this episode, so it's going to be a little bit all over the place. Bear with us, we really thought this was important so that you can tell where we're coming from musically and just where our tastes lie. Sit back and enjoy the ride, I guess.
Before we start, we just wanted to mention that Old Town Road by Lil Nas X and Billy Ray Cyrus has now broken the record for the most weeks spent at number one on the Billboard charts. It's been up there for 17 weeks now.
Yeah, as happy as I am about this, I hope it's not an end to the endless release of remixes that we all have been predicting. I don't want them to ever stop featuring different people in this song with different arrangements and colors of horses on the album art, and I've enjoyed all of them immensely, especially Soul Town Road.
Getting into our top albums of 2019, we just wanted to list some honorable mentions, which include Panorama by La Dispute, the Gloria EP by the Lumineers, Father of the Bride by Vampire Weekend, and Native Tongue by Switchfoot.
These are all fantastic albums, and you should definitely check them out if you get a chance. We're not really going to have time to talk about all of them. And Father of the Bride and Native Tongue will actually be getting sort of their own episode in a way. We're going to be discussing both of these bands' tours, Switchfoot and Vampire Weekend, once they hit the road in support of their album. But in the meantime, if you haven't listened to them, you definitely should. They are fantastic. And now, before we start on the actual list, we're gonna have a word from our sponsor, Anchor. So first on the list, this list is in not really any particular order, but we thought these two albums should be grouped together because they're pretty similar. They came out 1 week apart, Almost Free, Fiddler, and Swimmer's sophomore effort, Berkeley's on Fire. These are two really stellar punk albums that kind of capture that, discontent LA sound. I'm mad at the establishment, mad at the world, and I'm a little bit depressed, but I'm gonna write a kind of funny song about it. So I like these two albums pretty much equally. There's the more abrasive Almost Free that has, there's songs that remind me of the Beastie Boys. There's songs that are entirely instrumental. It jumps around a lot. Berkeley's on Fire is pretty tight melodically and in terms of the songwriting. And, Lainey, you said you preferred Berkeley's on Fire, right?
Yeah, I mean, nothing against Fiddler. I like the album. It's just, for some reason, it almost seems like they're trying too hard in a way, but at the same time, their lyrics are just kind of surface level. I mean, the only lyric that really pops into my brain from the album is, "I'm cracking one open with the boys by myself." I mean, what does that even mean?
That's a great line, though. Yeah, I agree to an extent, even though it didn't turn me off to the album. There's not a lot of substance on one hand. On the other hand, there is a lot of substance. There's a song called Alcohol. I'm thinking back, I don't know if there is a song on the album that doesn't reference drugs or something. Kind of in a humorous way. I hope the boys in Fiddler are not speaking from experience, because the speaker on this album does not describe a very healthy lifestyle. But I would challenge you, is there really a lot of meaning on Berkeley's on Fire? I know Drive North was not the most meaningful album. Have they improved in their lyricism?
Yeah, I think you actually see a significant increase in the meaning behind their words. For example, Too Much Coffee is written by Max Becker, and it's kind of cool to look at because he wrote it at different stages of, like, when the band was first starting out. Like, that's kind of what the first verse is looking at, and it just kind of goes through the uncertainty of, like, are they going to make it as a band, and in the end, like, they're kind of finding their place, like, with this second album that was more successful, and they're, like, touring more consistently. So I just think that Berkeley's on Fire is definitely more substantial than Almost Free.
Okay, that's a fair viewpoint. Check both of those albums out. Another really solid rock album. This one, not so much a punk album, more of a sort of neo-blues, I guess you would call his sound. Gary Clark Jr.'s release, This Land. I've been a fan of Gary Clark Jr. since I was like 13, probably, just because back then I thought it was cool that there was a young new musician that played guitar. My horizons weren't very broad back then, but he really goes beyond his sort of like traditionalist sound that made him popular. There's allusions to hip-hop. There's a song that's kind of just like a soul ballad. There's some shredding on this album, and it just kind of made me feel refreshed, you know? Hip-hop is sort of the top genre right now, but rock is still holding its own. There's still good rock music being made in 2019, and that puts a smile on my face. Years to Burn, not so much a rock album. This is a collaboration between Iron and Wine and Calexico. It's more just kind of a sort of, I don't want to call it country because it doesn't line up with what the genre country represents, but sort of a mellow bluegrass indie folk blend with a little bit of country influences. Doesn't hit as hard as This Land and doesn't shred nearly as much, but it's still a really nice listen. There's subtle bits of melody that kind of just hits you in that special way sometimes. And Years to Burn, Calexico, and Iron and Wine, really great album. So now we're going to talk about an album that is barely a half hour long and it packs the force of a whole discography, I feel. Both of us have been fans of this album since it came out. I don't know who out of the two of us likes it more. It's hard to tell. Usually, one of us is clearly the forerunner in preference of an album, but Denzel Curry's Zoo is a musical tour de force. Lainey, do you have anything to say about this record?
Something about this album, I usually don't seek out rap albums to listen to them all the way through. Nothing against it, it's just not necessarily my favorite genre. But this album I can listen to all the way through, maybe because it's so short.
Yeah, it's 29.
It's just like, he kind of sticks to like short phrases in the song and they just like repeat over and over, but each song is really catchy. I don't know what it is, but I really like this album.
Yeah. This Zoo finds Denzel Curry sort of channeling a totally different energy than anything he's ever done. Taboo, to me, which he released last year, was kind of an interesting emotional study, I guess you would say, but it didn't feel like the hard-hitting hip-hop that I feel Denzel really came up making. It kind of felt like he was looking for a sort of consciousness that isn't really in his wheelhouse. I felt like I was listening to a trap rapper from Miami trying to make To Pimp a Butterfly or something. This album is... It's so hard to put into words what it makes you feel, because it's just non-stop, just going for it, going hard the entire time. Most of the record was freestyled. He puts on small up-and-coming underground rappers from Miami. Rick Ross is on there on one of the most apocalyptic sounding songs that either of them have ever done, I think. There's that amazing hook on Speedboat where he's just, I don't want to use my Desert Eagle. You know, there's so much. Yeah, laugh at my singing all you want. It's a good album, and you know it. You can listen to it on your drive to work, and it's just the perfect length. There's little skits in between that are hilarious. This is just a great record.
That is one thing that I like about it. It's not... None of the songs are, like, some weird-sounding thing that people sometimes put in, like more indie-sounding things. It all just sounds good and, like, feels... It's, like, easy to listen to.
Yeah. It's kind of a hard concept for me to describe, because I often am the person that will say, like, you know, you should put yourself out there in your music listening and, you know, listen to things that are out of your comfort zone. But this Zoo does not ask a lot of the listener. It's just banger after banger after banger, and somehow sounds fresh and new every time, while still using sounds that have been around for decades, really. Look at Ricky. That's almost an old sounding song. Sounds like something that, I don't know, like UGK might have done or something. But his prowess at the mic, his personality comes out in every song, and this is, I don't want to say it's the best album, rap album of the year, because there's a lot more to come, and I don't know. These days you can never tell when someone's going to do a surprise drop, but so far I would say it's the best true hip-hop album. Next we're going to talk about a little phenomenon that happened this summer, kind of for 2 weeks. Garage Rock came back. The Black Keys and the Raconteurs, who, if you don't know, that's one of Jack White's groups. He's got like 2,000 projects, but this is one of them. He's got with Brendan Benson and two of his other friends. I like this band because it's a group where Jack White seems to listen to other people's input. It doesn't just feel like his, you know, creative vision or something. It feels like, you know, truly a band, a group of people making music together, not one person making music and three other people doing everything they say. And then the Black Keys, who have been compared to Jack White, well, the White Stripes, ever since they came out, just because they both have kind of a fresh, modern sound that harkens back to an older, bluesier, lo-fi sort of sound. Let's Rock by the Black Keys and Help a Stranger by the Raconteurs also came out just 1 week apart. Help a Stranger went number one, which is really impressive, because Third Man is an independent record company, and I wouldn't call them a large presence in the industry overall, but I guess, you know, the Raconteurs haven't released music for 10 years, and they came back full force on this album. Let's Rock is fantastic also. I will say, I think Help a Stranger is better. What do you think, Lainey? Is Help a Stranger better? She's making a confused face. It's pretty close. Let's Rock has some jams. Help a Stranger has more jams, I would say. But you should check both of these out if you like bluesy riffs and hard-hitting choruses. Both of them harken back to, you know, the days when good music came out of garages, and it doesn't happen so much anymore, but it's two solid records. Okay, Lainey, what's your next pick for best albums of 2019?
This next album isn't from an artist I typically listen to, but when I saw that it was a soundtrack for his new book, I checked it out and I wound up really enjoying Logic's Supermarket. I read the book, which was really good, and while reading, it wasn't really clear how the music directly related to the storyline, except for the fact that they both had like a dreamy, psychedelic feel, kind of as if you were in a tunnel. I'm definitely not a hardcore Logic fan or a huge fan of his other music, but I just really liked how this album showed a softer, more indie and melodic side of him. But I know you're not a huge Logic fan, so what did you think about it?
Yeah, you know, it... Everything you say about this album is correct. The difference in my take on it is I don't really feel like it's a side of Logic as much as he's kind of just aping the 90s, sort of. And there's a song that's literally just like a Chili Peppers song. And, you know, yes, he sounds like Mac DeMarco and Tame Impala, but it doesn't feel genuine to me. It feels like he's kind of just like dipping his feet into these other genres and acting like it's a new idea he came up with. And that's fine, I guess, but I think I would rather listen to the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Mac DeMarco, and Tame Impala than listen to Logic pretending to be them. I don't know. And this... Look, I don't hate Logic, but I have a very complicated musical experience with him because it kind of goes in a cycle every time he has a new release where I will be into this new album, I'll think it's really great, and then after about a week or two, I'll realize that he's just kind of doing an impression of some other sort of music. He doesn't really have a defined style, and I feel like a lot of people think Logic is this musical genius and lyrical genius, and I just feel like he isn't. He's just kind of fake woke, and he copies other people. It happened when Bobby Tarantino 2 came out, and I listened to it, and I thought, this is great, and then I kind of realized he was just doing his best Travis Scott. And then Young Sinatra 4 is his, you know, his, I guess you could say his take, but I wouldn't even say that, more like just his impression of boom bap. And then you've got this album, Supermarket. There's a guitar strumming, so, oh, it's totally different, I guess.
I think it's easier for me than it is for you to just kind of disregard all that and, like, looking just solely at the music. I know I haven't gotten tired of listening to it yet.
Hmm. Well, the Red Hot Chili Peppers are a good band, so I guess we can leave it there. Next, we have an album that I did not expect to like at all. My enjoyment of this album goes completely against every musical decision I have ever made in terms of my listening. Friends and family were shocked and appalled when I told them I really liked this album. And I don't know, were you expecting to like it, Lainey? What was your expectation of Next?
I've never ever been an Ariana Grande fan, and I didn't even listen to it until after you recommended it to me, but when I did, it was really? Just like, yeah.
Wow. You're welcome. Yeah, this. So, it's been happening for years and years since she came out, but Ariana has just been slowly slipping deeper and deeper into rap, hip hop territory, and a lot of that was, I think, due to her closeness to Mac Miller. Rest in peace, Mac Miller. But this album finds her having this just kind of melodic trap, but sort of still pop sound that is just really, really pleasing. And there's a remix of Seven Rings with 2 Chainz that smacks hard. You've got that awesome final part on Bad Idea where it's just so bassy and trippy and the hi-hats come in nice and sharp. And I really love this album. I love an Ariana Grande album, which even a year ago I did not ever think was a sentence that would come out of my mouth, but it's pretty great.
I think it's ear candy, isn't that what you call it?
Yeah, that's why
everything sounds good. The only I do have a little bit of difficulty taking her whistle notes sometimes. I know that they are amazing feats, but for some reason they just annoy me. Yeah.
There's a part of Ariana Grande that I feel is sort of the contemporary version of an 80s guitarist just doing like an obnoxious guitar solo for some reason. It doesn't really serve the music when she does these what are they even called, like grace notes or whatever, like these fancy.
She does have amazing vocals.
No, I am not saying Ariana Grande has a bad voice, but she has an amazing voice.
I think that,
but I know she has an amazing voice.
Shines through just when she's singing.
Yeah, it doesn't serve the music, I think. I also think this album is a nice counterpart to Sweetener, as sad as like the situation that brought it to be is with her relationship with Pete Davidson, but the bubblegum kind of aesthetic that Pharrell brought to Sweetener versus the dark and atmospheric trap on this album, it's a nice contrast. I don't know to what degree she already was planning to do this dark, moody album, but I like it, so there's that. And finally, we have best. Would you call it best album of the year?
I think definitely so far.
I would.
My favorite.
This. We're jumping the gun with this award or decision or whatever because year's not over yet. But Igor, Tyler the Creator, is such a good album. It's so good. It really just showcases his level of devotion to his music and his ability to be creative over the course of an album to do something that no one has really done before. But I mean, his inspirations are really clear, and nonetheless it's very original. He uses features in a way that is completely unique and in a way that serves the music as opposed to just being a cash grab to grab more listeners. You don't really see the features listed on the album. Lainey, what are your thoughts on Igor?
I know that I don't typically look at music as analytically as you do, so this is my... This might be in a lot simpler terms than how you would put it, but there are a couple things that I really like about the album, like how it's kind of like crackly the whole way through. Like the first time I listened, I wasn't sure if there was something up with my headphones or what, and I really like the background vocals across the album as well.
Yeah, they're very sweet sounding and just there's an aspect here too of ear candy, but the complex story arc that's being described, I think, makes it, you know, kind of still a high level of art. There's, you know, he's talking about a relationship and being angry that the person he loves someone else, and eventually coming to terms with it and wanting to be friends with that person, which is, I think, a really really nice sentiment. As for that crackly lo-fi aesthetic, but okay, tell me this. You listened to Cherry Bomb, right?
Yes.
And the lo-fi aesthetic is there as well.
Mm-hmm.
But did you think it really worked on Cherry Bomb? In my opinion, it sort of didn't. And I didn't really pay much attention to Cherry Bomb when it came out, but I went back and listened after this album, and I felt like there was something he was trying there that he just wasn't ready artistically to stick the landing, and he really stuck it here.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And it's also such a consistent album sonically. There's that, like, the sound, it's not going to sound right coming through the mic, and I don't think I can really make the sound with my mouth, but there's that really just nice sounding bass that starts out the album, and it is there throughout. It really just is like, you feel it in your chest, you know? Also, Jack White's on it, and I love Jack White, so there's that. There's Kanye's verse on Puppet, which is fire, but also a little bit hilarious. And just, this is an album that reminds me that people out there still care about making good albums, not singles, not things that will just are designed in focus group to top charts, even though this got number one over Father of Assad, which was pretty amazing to watch unfold. But yeah, it just a really great album, and I think that about wraps it up. Do you have anything left to say, Lainey? No? All right, well, thank you so much for listening. We got through all of the notable things we wanted to say about this year so far. We're going to be coming with more takes on music, discussions. We're going to try to talk about some movies, too, that are going to be coming out. And we're really excited about it. So thank you for listening to our first episode. And we hope you join us on the next one. Peace. This episode was written by Ned and Lainey Kitchmenda. Our producers were Lainey Kitchmenda and Ned Kitchmenda. Our audio techs were Lainey Kitchmenda and Ned Kitchmenda. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Industry Herb. Hope to see you again next time. Have a phenomenal day.